Turkey, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That is where you go if you want to jump into the chat room where they're already having a rollicking good time. Yes, indeed. Click on the tab chat room at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. You will be eagerly greeted by Anatole Hoghead, John CDN, Jules, Steve from Georgistan, and BT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran and moderator, Sarky, who, exercising his powers as a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space for one more day, because it's going to be too hot tomorrow to become in the chat room man cave. Hey, and there's Soapbox Geezer coming along, too. Excellent, excellent. We've got a good crew here for Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I gotta tell you, as Thorn in the Side Thursdays go, I'm Bob Kincaid. As Thorn in the Side Thursdays go, this one was almost much. There's almost too much, too many thorns. Love is a rose, but you better not pick it. It only grows when it's on the vine. No roses grew on vines. But anyway, I got a feeling we're going to be busy. Got milk? We'll deal with that. Yeah. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast. We have no ads for Buy Gold Now or vacuum cleaners or mattresses or things to grow hair or erections or Bose Wave radios or General Steel buildings or lumber liquidators floors or any of that stuff you hear on per inquiry ads on right wing radio that just aren't here. Okay, no, yeah, that's more like it, Hoghead. Love is a nose, but you better not pick it. Hey. Oh, we got thorns tonight that are like 12-inch common spikes. We do. But at any rate, this is a listener-supported program. As best as I can figure, I don't know. I guess locking the doors to the Cathedral of Common Sense doesn't work anymore. Everybody decided just to hold it as long as they could and then pee all over the blood-red carpet last night. So we find ourselves with a fundraising goal somewhere around $355 this evening. And plenty of bills awaiting to be paid. Yeah, $355. So that's 10 at 35, 35 at 10, 1 at 355, etc. And if you'd like to, and I hope you would, help keep this broadcast effort on the air, then just run right over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click on the tab called Contribute, and there you will find the PayPal interface. PayPal works for most people. It works for us here. And I can tell you from a customer service standpoint, and this is an unpaid product mention, They're all unpaid. What am I talking about? I get better service out of customer service at PayPal than I've ever gotten out of any brick-and-mortar bank, and that's a fact. It may not be so on the other end, but that's a fact on this end. Just fill out all the stuff there. No need to fill out the fields about what you do for Dr. Frank Burns there at his medical practice in Talibandiana, but just get through the rest of it. And a reminder, we are constantly on the lookout for new subscribers. We'd like to have 100. The goal is 400. But every subscriber is great. And so just if you want to, just click that box that says make this a recurring monthly donation and put $10 in it and set it and forget it. You'll never have to worry about it again for at least a year. But they do, I think, fall off at a year. And that's kind of, it's been happening. 1 year anniversaries coming up and things like that. So if you might want to check. But anyway, we'll take all the subscribers we can get. And we do so gratefully, most gratefully indeed. And a reminder, the wild rice offer is still on the table. The first order is out, and I'll be putting a second order in. And I'm keeping it open for a few more days just to see if... because there haven't been that many orders so far. And I like to make it a rather large order so it's not a pain in the ass for my friend when he sends this stuff. So he can do it all in one box, If it fits, it ships. For $60, I will gift you a pound of wild rice harvested up in the waters near Lake Superior, clean, clear water, harvested by hand in the ancient tradition of 10,000 years. And for $100, 2 pounds. So if you want it, you have to write in, give me a good mailing address, and tell me that you want it. Okay? Please? And that way I'll know. I can't just guess. So all of that is available. Like I said, we're trying to knock down $355 this evening so that we don't go into Friday on the front porch with some sort of monumentally impossible-to-reach fundraising goal. And... pay bills, because that's a thing. I wish it wasn't, but it is. So enough of that. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And like I said, just, they're really sharp and really, prolific this particular evening. Okay, how about a little, Adventure in Capitalism? Huh? Kelly, sister of Ron. Of Ron of the soon-to-be-refrozen North. Alerted me to this. There is, as I have said, an ongoing conspiracy to try to turn me into a vegan. I have thus far resisted it. But, dear God, they're really putting in the overtime now. Do you remember a few years back when it was a little surprising to see milk... reaching hydrocarbon prices? Yeah. Turns out that wasn't an accident. Turns out that was on purpose. There has been, over time, an antitrust class action lawsuit against Merca's dairy producers. You remember with the charming little Got Milk ads where everybody had a milk mustache and milk, it does a body good and all of that stuff. Yeah. I know we don't like to think about where stuff comes from. Damn it, this is a consumer-driven society, and if we need food, it either comes from the grocery store or the restaurant, right? Just like electricity comes from the wall socket. Yeah. Well, no, there's stuff back there. There's stuff back behind the grocery store. There's trucks, and the trucks deliver the stuff, whether it be meat or vegetable produce or canned goods or what have you. Or, in fact, milk products. Yogurt. Ice cream. Half and half. Buttermilk. I love me some buttermilk. Milk. Whole milk. Well, not really whole milk. 4% milk, 2% milk, 1% milk. Thin, skim, not much to it milk. Butter. Sour cream. Yeah. All kinds of stuff. Cheese.
Cheese. I simply adore cheese.
Well, there's a whole lot of cattle behind all those dairy products. And apparently, apparently some milk producers back at the beginning of the toward the beginning of the 21st century decided that they were not making enough money. Well, I'm sorry, Sparky. Damn it, Bob, I'm looking at cows out the door. And Sparky, the cows are looking at you. No, Steve from Georgia Stan. There's no milk in Cheese Whiz. We discussed that last night. It's a petroleum byproduct. But, no, America's dairy producers decided they weren't making enough money. So what did they do? Well, they engaged in something called a herd retirement program. Oh, Mr. Orwell! See, you hear retirement, I hear retirement, and I think, yeah, you know, just kind of sit around in the Barca lounger, read the paper, drink the coffee, getting the motor home and drive across the fruited plain and see America first and right, retirement. Apparently a dairy cow hears retirement and shudders all the way to its udders. Going to hell for that. Because when a dairy cow gets retired, a dairy cow gets turned into hamburger. Mm-mm. It, cheap ground beef. Not the stuff. No, the stuff that goes into your Dindy Moore beef stew or the little hunks of beef maybe in some Campbell's vegetable beef soup or some chunky sirloin burger soup with the artificial little grill stripes on the little little beef sirloin beef burgers inside. Yeah, right. So dairy producers, including the National Milk Producers Federation, a lobbying group, and industry co-ops Dairy Farmers of America, Land O'Lakes, Dairy Lee Cooperative, and Agrimark. Well, they all conspired together to put together this herd retirement program. Now, come on, Bessie, it's time for carousel. Capricorn 5122. Retirement awaits. And so these co-ops bought out entire herds of perfectly contented cattle. Well, probably not contented, but perfectly live, functioning cattle, and sent them off to be retired, killed. They did this in order to reduce the available supply of raw milk, which, since then, the West Virginia legislature at least has done its part, the teabagging, urine, snake-colored, flag-waving West Virginia legislature has done its part to combat by making raw milk legal in West Virginia. Never mind. Dairy cattle that are to be retired are referred to as spent, by the way. I bet a dairy cow doesn't feel spent. But I guess it was too much. I mean, it's a function of my naivete to think that dairy cattle just sort of live out their lives and then one day, Elizabeth, this is the big one, and flop over dead. No, they're killed. Just retired, killed. So that group of dairy producers, the National Milk Producers Federation, and Dairy Farmers of America, Land O'Lakes, Dairy League Cooperative, and AgriMark, entered into a conspiracy, what's called an antitrust conspiracy, or they entered into a trust, I guess, and it's a function of the law to bust the trust, as Teddy Roosevelt called it. And they limited the supply of raw milk that would go into things like cheese, sour cream, butter, milk, buttermilk, which, yes, Steve from Georgistan, I too love. Yeah, there's a good example, Steve from Georgistan in the chat room noting, yeah, the meatballs and SpaghettiOs. No, Steve, that's Soylent Green, and Soylent Green is people, my friend. Human beings. And so they killed off a whole bunch of cattle just to watch them die and drove the price of the commodity price of raw milk up. Remember the pork bellies and the orange juice futures in, what was it, Trading Places with Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy? Yeah, like that. And so then, in turn, yogurt prices went up, cream prices went up, cottage cheese prices went up. And now, having been busted, they've settled. The lawsuit was filed way back in 2011. But among other things, the University of Missouri-Columbia, over whom my beloved Mountaineers were recently victorious. Had to get that in. Did a study. A fellow by the name of Scott Brown did. And it turns out that the herd retirement resulted in a net 59 cents per 100 pounds of milk price increase. Yeah. Now, as a way of explaining away this behavior, the claim is that this was a voluntary self-help farmer-funded program that allowed dairy farmers who wanted to stop farming to exit farming altogether. Interestingly, they don't take the dairy farmers who retire out and kill them and put them in SpaghettiOs. And really, I'm glad about that. Cooperatives working together was part of it. It was the program. They oversaw the herd retirement program, and putting out a press release, they said, "It is important to note that the court has found no antitrust violation, and CWT makes no admission of wrongdoing in this settlement." Yeah, okay. See, that's the thing about settlements under the law. In fact, I was having a little conversation during off hours with our buddy Reverbo, the human boy, who's still waiting on his helium-filled pants to arrive, about the Fox News settlement with Gretchen Carlson, in which Gretchen Carlson will receive some several millions of dollars, and Roger Ailes, having walked away with a $40 million settlement package, will pay some of those and some of those dollars. But in the final analysis, because the case was settled, Fox News gets to admit no wrongdoing, and Gretchen Carlson has to shut up about everything that was done to her. Yeah, that mental image of Roger Ailes standing by the trampoline going, "You wearing panties under there? I hope you're not," is going to stay with me for a while. But that all goes away now. Just like Bill O'Reilly got to keep his job even after the great falafel controversy, when it turned out that he was a serial sexual predator, a sexual abuser, a sexual harasser. Still on the air every night, baby. Yeah, because both sides bought their piece. And Gretchen would frankly rather have a lot of money than push the thing all the way through the court system and roll the dice and hope that a jury would agree with her and award her some money and be able, and then she'd be able to say, see what a bunch of sleazy louts those people at Fox are? It ain't worth it. So she just takes the money and, well, you know, runs. So too with the dairy farmers, the dairy cooperatives, the dairy dons, if you will. Hey, Dairy Don, Dairy Day. And so they admit no liability, they admit no conspiracy, but it's pretty obvious that there, well, that there was one. And this is just the really, really spiny tip of the iceberg. No, wait, Bob, icebergs are for Tuesday. Yeah. But, I mean, that's it's a beginning. And why, though? I mean, you have to ask, if economics are based upon the law of supply and demand, and if the law of supply and demand is, in fact, a law of nature, just like gravity, just like Boyle's gas laws, then how can it be circumvented? Now, in the real physical world of laws, the most you can do is work with them. I mean, Boyle's gas laws. You can't make them not be what they are. You can merely devise tactics and mechanisms that take advantage of how those laws work. But supply and demand is apparently not a law, is it? Supply and demand is more of a theorem. No, it's not even a theorem. Supply and demand is something closer akin to a notion. Something that we do, not we, not you, not me, but something that corporations do if they agree with it. And so, in this case, they didn't agree with the notion of supply and demand because they had too much supply. And so these conspirators in the dairy industry decided to artificially limit the supply. And lo and behold, look, a miracle occurred. Oh, money. which in turn brings me to Gary Johnson, libertarian, who appeared on Morning Joe. Oh, dear. As a presidential candidate, don't worry. I'm sure they'll get around to getting Jill Stein on there too, just as soon as she's done running from the police. But they had Gary Johnson on, former governor of New Mexico, right? Yeah, former governor of New Mexico. And they had him on for purposes of talking about his goals and policies as a potential president of the new United States of America. And that's when things went sideways. There's a reason that third-party presidential candidates are at best farm team candidates for the presidency, not ready for prime time. Gary Johnson, over at Morning Joke, proved himself not ready. Never mind prime time, was not ready for morning drive time. Now remember, being the libertarian candidate for president, Gary Johnson is our admittedly dope-smoking candidate for president, because that's what libertarians are. They're Republicans who just want to smoke dope. And who am I to criticize that? No one. It is not for me to do. However, I do feel comfortable in saying that I don't particularly... And I'll probably get some grief for this. Well, why not, Bob? Dude. I don't necessarily want a president blazing up a fatty. Just because it's a 4 to 8 year miserable job. And it really does require sort of, you know, always being there, being on the job. Being in your head. Dude, I want to see some fireworks. Where's the nuclear football? Kill. So, in his libertarian in his libertarian way, Gary Johnson wandered onto the set of Morning Joe, where they had not set a trap for Gary Johnson. They were warm and welcoming, and they didn't have trick questions for Gary Johnson, like, who's buried in Grant's tomb? Or what color was George Washington's white horse? Or if M-U-L-Y's Muley and D-U-L-Y's Dooley, what does J-U-L-Y spell? No, they just wanted to ask him questions that you would ask a typical presidential candidate. That's when this happened.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Well, with regard to Syria, I do think that it's a mess. I think that the only way that we deal with Syria is to join hands with Russia to diplomatically bring that at an end. But when we've aligned ourselves with, when we've supported the opposition, the Free Syrian Army, is also coupled with the Islamists, and then the fact that we're also supporting the Kurds.
A verb, Gary. We need a verb. What would you do about Aleppo? And what is Aleppo? That's not a joke.
I'm so wasted.
Yeah. He really said that. Ah, yeah, got it. Yeah, it's early. I mean, I'm so not usually up at this hour. I mean, most of the times, like, I stay up late at night, you know? And sometimes, you know, you get the munchies and I go down for a nice burger with some green chili sauce on it. You know, it's, oh, man, when you've got the munchies, there's nothing better. It ain't Jeopardy, Gary. What is Aleppo? All right, just for the fun of it, let's finish this off, shall we?
And this is it's just a mess. And that this is the result of regime change that we end up supporting, and inevitably, these regime changes have led to a less safe world.
Oh, you can't sneak anything past Gary Johnson, can you? He's a sharp one. So they went into damage control mode and quickly booked him on The View, where he tried to explain away his what is Aleppo Alex moment.
Did you have a brain freeze moment, or was it that the phrase Aleppo threw you? What?
No excuse. I was thinking in terms of acronym Aleppo.
Right.
That's no excuse whatsoever. But the dynamics in play in Syria are. Is that you've got the Assad regime up against the Free Syrian Army, which we support, that are allied with the Islamists, ISIS, and you can't make this stuff up. We support the Free Syrian Army. Free Syrian Army, we've heavily armed. Those arms end up in ISIS hands. This is as a result of us supporting regime change, which I maintain. When it comes to regime change in my lifetime, that has not turned out to be positive. I can't think of a single example of where that has turned out.
You agree with Trump on that, I think. Trump says that, too.
Well, I have a trouble following Trump and what he says.
But he says that.
You're not the only one.
That's what she's...
Right. He makes you confused, but a lot of things that I read about you is you don't believe in going in and meddling in other people's business.
Well, correct. And Trump does...
Correct. But these are not easy questions and they're not easy answers, and I'm not pro-war. And the problem with finding somebody to back over there is they don't have a good group of well-meaning but poorly armed Baptists for us to give guns to. I mean, the Free Syrian Army, they're associated with the Islamists. Islamist being another Orwellian word that we have invented in the 21st century to indicate Muslims we don't like. So if something gets blown up, if there's a dynamite belt, that was an Islamist. Although, curiously, people who shoot up nightclubs or churches in Charleston or the movie theaters in Aurora, Colorado, or schools in Connecticut, we don't call them Islamists. Because most of the time they're Christians. And we don't even refer to their Christianity. I seem to have strayed a bit from my original brief. So now, apparently, the Russian-supported Assad regime has taken to dropping chlorine gas from helicopters on the civilian population of Aleppo. Aleppo being an ancient city, really ancient, older than Baghdad. Going back to classical times in one form or another, and probably inhabited by Stone Age peoples. Been there a while. Been on the map for a good bit. It's just that Gary Johnson never got around to looking at, and he was, you know, after all, Gary Johnson, libertarian, was thinking about, he was thinking in terms of acronyms, Aleppo. Anybody want to take Aleppo and come up with the American League extolling pure patriotic opportunism? How about that? Yeah, that's there, Aleppo. The American League extolling pure patriotic opportunism. And in that case, he's for it. Aleppo. But this Aleppo, I mean, it's just hard. And to that extent, you know, he's kind of correct. But the question is, and it's not just a question for the United States of America, it's a question for the world. What do you, and it's a question we so seldom get right, the answer to, tormenting grammar, language. We seldom get it right. You know, remember how wrong we got it in Rwanda? Long, long, long ago, when that little genocide was taking place, and the excuses were, well, you know, it's there in the middle of Africa, and damn, it's hard to get to, and there's no real staging areas, and well, you know, black people, who gives a shit? They don't have any oil now, do they? South Sudan. The turmoil that is presently roiling Ethiopia enough that one Olympic athlete took his life in his own hands and gave a resistance sign. Yeah, we're not so good at these things. Especially when we're the ones who set the stage for it in the first place. Do you remember way, way, way back when Pappy Bush was still president of the United States and Bill Clinton's ambitions were still a long shot, and we had that glorious Bush War I? This will not stand. Remember that? And the Glaspie memo, the United States does not take positions in Arab conflicts. And the made-up, phony, baloney, bogus, frauded-up, faked-up, ginned-up, dummied-up story of ravenous, cannibalistic Iraqi soldiers throwing precious little Kuwaiti babies out of incubators five stories down onto the streets below. You remember all that? Yeah. Well, when Stormin Norman and Colin Powell and that bunch engineered their victory over the hapless Iraqi forces. Remember how scared we were supposed to be of the Republican Guard? Oh, yeah, well, he's holding his Republican Guard in reserves. That's what he's doing. And no, they just weren't much of a fighting force. Maybe against another neighbor, but, you know, against the most powerful military on the earth in the universe of the world today, forever, amen, hallelujah. Not so much. Well, when we had them good and whooped, Pappy Bush's advisors came to him and said, you know, let's just leave it where it stands. no need to push on to Baghdad, because I know we don't like Saddam Hussein, but we used to like him, and we used to sell him a lot of guns and bombs and poison gas and shit. Let's just kind of leave him in place, because, you know, if we take him out, we're going to destabilize the entire region, and then we're just going to be in a world of shit we don't want to be in, and frankly, don't have to be in. And Pappy Bush, who, say whatever else you wish to say about him, was not nearly as dim as his dim son, said, "Sounds like good advice. Let's work on my reelection." And the no-fly zone was there, and, you know, as a result of that, we killed a million American children. And later on, Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, was asked about whether a million innocent child deaths were worth it, and she said, "Yeah, on the whole, I think it was." Remember all that? Because I do. Well, enter dim leader, because we just don't... We talked about it a lot when it was going on, but somehow or another we've forgotten how to talk about the origins of this particular history. Gary Johnson didn't even know... it's the American League of Exceptional Patriotic... what did I say? Right. He couldn't... all he said... You know, whenever we do regime change, but he couldn't say Bush, because Bush is at the center of it all. George W. fucking Bush is at the center of it all, and I damned well won't forget it. Not the least because of the number of American mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles, sons and daughters, and husbands and wives who have empty places at their tables now because George W. Bush said, "Fuck Saddam, we're taking him out." And they did. And there was a show trial. And he was hanged. And what did we get for it? A mess. A mess we're still in. We don't seem able to do much of anything in what is now referred to as the Middle East, but the classical in antiquity, they're simply referred to as Asia. We can't do anything there without... up. I mean, we could fuck up a one car suicide bombing there, and we have. We've screwed up weddings, drones, what have you. We keep selling arms to the Saudis, who use it to slaughter innocent Yemenis. You know, at least the UK, a commission over there recommended recently that the United Kingdom stop selling arms to the Saudis until the Saudis start at least pretending to be remotely civilized. But now Gary Johnson proves why there will never, why, not within my lifetime, probably not within yours, be a third party president. Because they're not ready. I mean, it really... I know a lot of people voted for him, but did anybody really think that Ross Perot was ready to be president? Because I didn't. Maybe people felt like John Anderson was ready to be president. He comes to mind. Donald Trump is not ready to be president. And frankly, it's a little disconcerting to see members of the Purity Brigade trying to talk themselves into a Trump vote that somehow or another that's going to be beneficial or bring on the apocarev or somehow or another America is going to be this country or the world will be the better for it, when the man clearly has a predilection for turning the planet into a cinder. Planet will still be here. It'll just be a lot more glow-in-the-darky. That risk at least exists. But that wasn't the end of Gary Johnson. Oh, no. When you're dealing with a presidential candidate, you ask, you know, you ask the silly seasoned presidential candidate stupid questions, which actually sometimes yield meaningful information. Now, granted, Gary Johnson says he hasn't smoked dope in several months. And I guess good on him. But among other things, he's been asked, not necessarily, you know, on Morning Joe, but he's been asked what his favorite book is. And hopefully this would, now we know courtesy of one of Donald Trump's former spouses, we know that he kept a copy of the speeches of Adolf Hitler on his night table for a little light reading when sleep wouldn't come. Gary Johnson, however, said in answer to a question at one point, what books had deeply influenced him? Well, he's a libertarian, so he's not going to pander to the Jesus freaks. And so he didn't answer the Bible. You remember when they asked him, leader, who his favorite philosopher was, and he said, hey, Jesus, when Jesus wasn't a philosopher. But, of course, the evangelical fundamentalists gave him a pass on that. He got a pass for a lot of stuff. Well, no Jesus for Gary Johnson. When they asked if, when he was asked if any books had influenced him deeply, he said, Ayn Rand, I love The Fountainhead. I love Atlas Shrugged. I do read. But those are a couple of books that I think, from a philosophical standpoint, I think The Fountainhead is my favorite book. And that's almost worse than the Aleppo answer. No, let's take away the almost. That's worse than the Aleppo answer. Much worse. That's saying that you subscribe to that sick, twisted philosophy that says that grabbing all you can and screwing everybody else is not only okay, it's a sign of good character, because that's what Ayn Rand believed. Well, I mean, to be fair, she believed it until she needed Social Security. Until she needed Medicare. At which point, she joyfully signed up and became a moocher. Because see, in Ayn Rand's books, that's what she calls anybody who accepts any sort of assistance from anybody. A moocher. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. And The Fountainhead is almost as awful as Atlas Shrugged. Although Atlas Shrugged, simply by dint of mere word count and density, is far worse. With lots of preachifying and speechifying by John Galt and other people, and have you ever seen the Gary Cooper film version of The Fountainhead? Ayn Rand made herself intolerable. even trying to give direction to Gary Cooper, who needed none from her. And she insisted that the long-winded, interminable monologues that she wrote be delivered word for word, and good filmmaking, you know, be damned. God or something, help us all. If an Ayn Rand true believer ever gets anywhere near the White House. And it's possible because another Ayn Rand true believer is actually in the line of succession for the presidency. Remember, it goes president, vice president, who's next? After the vice president, quick, civics test. Yeah, that's right, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. Eddie Munster is famous for having, at least at one point in time, given out and insisted upon reading, insisting they read Atlas Shrugged to his young and impressionable interns. And just in case, does anybody happen to recall that that book is just, you know, for somebody who's got good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical family values, that book is full of some weird-ass sex. And apparently Ayn Rand was into some weird-ass sexy time. So there's that. And yet somehow it feels like we haven't even scratched the surface, or perhaps had the surface scratch us. And that's mainly because we haven't. We have so much more to delve into for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. That's right, Stockton Larry in the chat room. There can be only one Ayn Rand. Yeah. Or, I'm sorry, da. She was Russian, you know. As I've noted before, say whatever you will about the Bolsheviks, but they figured out a way to run Ayn Rand out of the country and not have to deal with her. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a pain in the ass. Computer's being persnickety. Oh, that's right. That's right. Reverbo reminding me. Don't forget, Alan Greenspan was an Ayn Rand fan. Yes, he literally sat at her feet. I know. And I use literally in the literal sense of the word. He yes. So, to also that. And we've got a, you know, we don't have a whole lot of Barack Obama Thorn in the Side Thursday material. Got one tonight. Oh, yes, Lord. We certainly do. It's a good one, too. I was just looking in my email box from HillaryClinton.com. Glad you're here. Complete your supporter profile. No thanks. You've got all those millionaire, billionaire buddies. Get your money from them. Khalil sent me an email a couple of minutes ago. Lepos. New York Times setting the standard. Correction, September 8th, 2016. An earlier version of this article misidentified the de facto capital of the Islamic State. It is Raqqa in northern Syria, not Aleppo. correction, September 8th, 2016, an earlier version of the above correction misidentified the Syrian capital as Aleppo. It's Damascus. Khalil notes, Aleppo in every pot and Assad in every garage. That's good. Wait a minute. Especially the Aleppo in every pot part. Yes. Thanks, Khalil.
Yeah.
But we do. We've got lots and lots of thorns. Oodles of them, as a matter of fact. Sorry, I'm just getting the brakes set up. Because after all, it being Thursday, we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Hey, look! I just wanted to. I want credit where credit is due. We have 3 minutes before the hour, 57 minutes past. And I haven't told anybody how to vote. Now, granted, I also haven't told anybody how to vote on any previous programs, but I just wanted to make that, you know, clear. So, again, we are trying to wend our way down from a fundraising hole of $355. Thank you very kindly to Bob in Texas for helping out. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very kindly. And, well, so $255. Can we do that? It would be a big help not to go into Friday on the front porch with a big old hole in the ground to fill in. So let's take a break. And, of course, this is Conversation Radio. I have my own idea of what constitutes a thorn in the side. But there's every possibility in the world that you do as well. And you're welcome to join in with your own nominations. You know the numbers, I trust. The Stress Line, named after the inimitable, irrepressible Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. The other line, 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet, free, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio, and we'll be back.
Pick up on this! Pick up on this! Ha! I'm a greedy man, greedy man. I'm a greedy man, I'm a greedy man. Hey! I'm a greedy man. Now, brother, don't leave the home when undone. Hey, hey, hey! Now, brother, don't leave the home when undone. Wait a minute, sister. You gotta have something to sit on before I carry you home. Don't say I ain't got it, because I can't do without it. Too much is rough, but not too bad. But it's better than dying from something that you never had. Lord, there is. I may be cool sometime and pays, but let me tell you something. I love those sexy ways. Ha! I'm a greedy man. I'm a greedy man. My name is Jody, but my name is Brown. I like to love to get down, down, down. I'm a greedy man.
Greedy man.
I'm a greedy man. Now, brother, don't.
Thursday, September 8, 2016.
A 5.6 magnitude earthquake struck just after 7 a.m. local time.
Major earthquake rattles Oklahoma, linked to fracking.
The bulldozers are still going, and they're yelling at the men in hard hats.
Violent confrontation erupts at Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's pipeline protest. Typhoons in Asia, now 50% stronger than in the 1970s. Plus,
today we are moving the world significantly closer to the goal that we have set.
President Obama has formally signed the U.S. to the landmark United Nations Paris Agreement.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Temperatures last month shattered all previous records, including one record in Kuwait of 129.2 degrees Fahrenheit.
Now, I know 129 degrees sounds like a lot, but it's a dry hell.
Yep. Welcome to hell. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we take a day or two off for the holidays, and really, all hell seems to break loose all over the country, all over the world.
Yes, so a lot to catch up on. Here's a quick rundown on some of the things we missed. In the Atlantic, Hurricane Hermine killed 3 people over the Labor Day weekend in Florida and caused major storm surge along the eastern seaboard, made worse, scientists say, because of rising sea levels. Over in the Pacific, 2 rare hurricanes that were threatening Hawaii did not make official landfall, but caused storm surge and wind damage, and highlighted that Hawaii's new normal now includes being in the path of hurricanes thanks to warming ocean temperatures.
Because its old normal did not include hurricanes. They didn't used to hit Hawaii.
That's right. Hurricane Newton battered Mexico's Baja Peninsula after intensifying into a hurricane in less than 24 hours with what Weather Underground called, quote, frightening speed. Meanwhile, a new study concludes that typhoons in the Pacific Ocean near Asia are about 50% stronger than in the 1970s. The study in the journal Nature Geosciences did not find that typhoons were more frequent, but that they were more intense, with more storms reaching Category 4 and 5 level. The researchers blame warmer Pacific Ocean temperatures for providing more fuel to storms, but didn't identify whether that was due to man-made climate change due to a lack of long-term data. In North Dakota, a federal judge on Tuesday partially approved an emergency request by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe to halt construction on some, but not all, of a disputed section of the $4 billion Dakota Access Pipeline near their reservation. Over the holiday weekend, the pipeline company's private security personnel used dogs to attack Native American protesters who, in turn, were trying to stop bulldozers from tearing up what the tribe said are sacred burial sites. That judge is set to rule very soon on the tribe's broader request for an injunction to halt the pipeline's construction. In Oklahoma, Governor Mary Fallon ordered the shutdown of about 40 fracking wastewater injection wells after an earthquake measuring 5.6 hit the heart of fracking country on Saturday.
5.6.
Yes, that's a record.
Yeah, not one of these little tremors that they've been having. This was a big one.
Yeah, it was felt across six Midwestern states.
Wow.
And seriously damaged numerous homes and businesses in Pawnee County and on the Pawnee Indian Reservation, where six structures were deemed uninhabitable.
Uninhabitable.
Yeah.
We are now destroying entire homes.
Yeah. The disposal of toxic fracking wastewater into deep underground wells has been linked to Oklahoma's new status as the earthquake capital of the United States.
This needs to be underscored. We are causing earthquakes. And a lot of people seem to be just fine with that.
At the G20 summit in China over the Labor Day weekend, President Obama formally entered the United States into the historic Paris Agreement, joining the president of China, who also formally signed on to the accord in which all nations agree to cut greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change.
We have a saying in America that you need to put your money where your mouth is. And when it comes to combating climate change, that's what we're doing, both the United States and China. We're leading by example. As the world's two largest economies and two largest emitters, our entrance into this agreement continues the momentum of Paris and should give the rest of the world confidence, whether developed or developing countries, that a low-carbon future is where the world is headed.
Together, the U.S. and China, the top two emitters in the world, account for about 40% of global emissions. The agreement comes into force when 55 countries representing 55% of global emissions sign on.
And remember how Republicans told us for years that China would never, ever, ever agree to cut emissions?
Oh, yeah.
China, India, all these countries that are still growing, they're not going to stop doing what they're doing.
A climate policy that does not include massive energy consumers like China and India is essentially meaningless.
I don't think we can control the emissions from China and India.
We have statements from the leaders in China saying under no circumstances are they going to accept any kind of mandatory reduction.
They sure are wrong a lot. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Eight minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday for the 8th day of September 2016. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And over there on line one is somewhere out on the roads of the wilds of Southern California, maybe on the 608 or the 3 7/8. Anyway, it's Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
3 7/8.
Well, don't I mean, isn't it out there? 6 9/16.
Actually, I'm off the 101. I'm in Ventura County. I'm waiting for.
Have you seen any alligator lizards in the sky?
Say what?
that line from Ventura.
Why do you start with me with this?
Because you make it so damn much fun, Tracy. I mean, you never heard America singing Ventura Highway and they get the alligator lizards in the air. Yeah, it's in the air.
Okay,
in the air. Yeah, there I go singing again.
Yeah, no.
Just lost another subscriber.
No. I'm actually, it's so funny. I am sitting watching, I'm parked watching the Ventura Highway as we speak. Yes, I am. So how you doing, hon?
Well, you know, I guess I can't compare with the Ventura Highway where the days are longer, the nights are stronger than moonshine, but I'm okay. I mean, we've made it to Thursday.
Yes.
We're we passed the mark of the first full week of September.
Yes, we did, and I'm hearing that I'm hearing traveler news about about people giving money. Now, come on, y'all. I know. Look, I am the first to know and fully aware that times is tough and it's a struggle. I am so aware of that, and I have been blessed that I can contribute probably more often than some. How for never. Come on, y'all. We need to give my boy some help.
And the thing is, I was having this conversation earlier with another individual, and what we've got to do is get past the presidential election. Because
I think people are terrified, and they're like, you know.
Well, money, you know, the campaigns run on money, and it sucks all the oxygen out of the room every 4 years. We've been down this road before. 2008 was a struggle. 2012 was a struggle. And
I think this is, but you know what, Bob, with 2008, 2012, there were struggles, but there is not, I was nervous in 2012 because people were being assholes, and I'm like, there was some slit, you know, my upper lip and stuff, you know, until, you know, it was obvious that, you know, President Obama had won a second term. But this shit that's going on now.
So you see it too?
Oh God, I mean, look, I'm sitting here doing what I know I shouldn't be doing. I'm eating. Because that's my
we're not rule oriented around here. Have a snack. Yeah.
Oh no. I'm eating stuff I should not be eating. So I'm having, you guys have Wendy's out there? Is that just a Southern California?
Oh no. We so have Wendy's. I'll be honest, among the fast food burger chains, I'd rather have a Wendy's burger than say McDonald's or Burger Thing.
Oh God. Yeah. See, and here's the thing with tickles about Wendy's, they're not a lot around here. They used to be a lot. So they're not. So, they're, like I said, I'm like, ooh, actually, the off-ramp for where I have to get off the freeway is Wendy's Drive. And there, yes, there's a Wendy's right off the off-ramp. So I have to get me a Wendy's cheeseburger, fries. And,
yeah, the burgers are just fresher. I mean, they just are.
Yes. They are, and it's. I mean, I know this is not legitimate food porn, but I'm sorry. There's nothing better than dipping a French fry in a vanilla shake.
Wait. Okay. Now, vanilla is fairly new to the Wendy's lineup. I have long been known to dip the occasional fry in a Frosty, but it was the chocolate one.
Right. No, this I didn't. So yeah, I wasn't aware either.
So let's be clear: you will dip a French fry in a milkshake, but not in mayonnaise.
Fuck no! And I heard that smart ass comment you made the other day about the sucking mayonnaise.
I can't get away with anything.
It's so funny. It's like I know, you know, sometimes throughout the shows, and you know, and I haven't been around. And you mentioned me not, you know, I'm not listening, but I've been very consistent for the last couple of weeks, listening at least to the first half or so of the show. And I'm like, I'm not this bastard did not out me with the fucking mayonnaise. But I have to say, and I have, okay, like, you know, and I'm a firm. When you got you and
now
Thomas,
you know they put mayonnaise on, now you know Wendy's puts mayonnaise on their burgers as a matter of course. Yeah,
and I told you, did I not confess and admit that I have eaten more mayonnaise the last 4 years since I've been with Jan than I've eaten in my entire life?
Yes.
Now
wanted to make sure Wendy's wasn't sneaking anything past you.
No, bitch, no. Like I said, there's certain things I will now allow mayonnaise to pass my lips on through. But the problem is I can't dip anything. If it's a mayonnaise-based, like, dip kind of thing, I can't do it. I can't. But, like, you know, like when you were talking about the you know, when you put the mayonnaise for a grilled cheese sandwich, that I have done. Out of curiosity, and it ain't half bad. And I got to admit it, when I've made Jan those greasy burgers that you fry up in your pan and, you know, and you saute the onions in the meat grease.
Yeah, yeah.
You put the cheese on top. You have to fry the bun in the grease.
Damn,
and
Skippy.
I put mayonnaise on the bun. So, yes.
Well, okay, but
you said,
wait. You said if it's a mayonnaise-based dipping thing, it ain't happening. Does that include ranch?
That's definitely more. Ranch dressing is no. I mean, and so that's why Mama Tracy has her blue cheese dressing and Mama Jan has her ranch dressing. I can't do ranch. Can't do it.
Okay, just checking. We found her. We found the one woman in America, the one human being in America who does not like ranch. Okay. No, there's lots.
I'm
a purist. I'm a snob. I'm a ranch snob. I do not like pre-prepared ranch because it tastes like shit. I do, however, you know, you get me the package, get me the spices, bring me the buttermilk, get me the mayonnaise, and I'm there.
Now, see, Jan's the same way. She will make not a container, but a trough.
Oh, quart, by the quart.
Of ranch dressing. She will, I'm not sure about the mayonnaise, not the mayonnaise, but the buttermilk.
Well, you can, some people will use sour cream. But
right.
But the purists go with the buttermilk.
She was making mayonnaise. Well, you know, and I can understand that because I like buttermilk. You know, as a matter of fact, when I made my chicken fingers or tenders or whatever.
Now, wait, okay, so I got to know, are you a buttermilk snob?
I'm not a buttermilk snob, but
wait, because, you know.
I don't drink it. I can't drink it.
Well, there's buttermilk and there's buttermilk. There's whole milk buttermilk, and then there's that thin fat free business that you know.
That's the bullshit.
Now, the whole milk buttermilk is where it's at.
What's the point in having fat free buttermilk? That's like having fat free half and half. Why?
I've never gotten. I mean, how is it even half and half if it's fat free? That's
exactly.
Like fat-free cream. It's not cream anymore. And half is half milk and half cream. Right?
Exactly. And no different than half and cream of wheat.
And over the last 15 years, half milk, half cream, and 100% antitrust conspiracy.
That, man, when you were talking about that, I was crying because you know how I love me some dairy. It's one of those things that's so funny, you know, when you talk about food allergies and stuff. And the thing that, you know, would I be willing to give up for, or, you know, if I don't stop eating it, I'll die, kind of thing, or just remain sick all the time. Look, dairy, I mean, I might be able to give up bread, no, but dairy? Fuck you. I mean, I would have to be doing that, you know, those stages of grief.
Yeah,
you know, the bar,
well,
I would be at the bargaining stage. Like, wait, so
no, really, you can keep the broccoli, just please. Yeah. Ron in the soon-to-be refrozen North says Wendy's Junior Bacon Cheeseburger is an excellent snack for $1.79 Canadian. And up here, you can.
That's what I had.
Wait. And up here, you can get garlic mayonnaise for dipping your fries. Take that in the land of freedom.
That's some nasty-ass shit. I'll never forget the first time that I didn't even know there was such a thing about dipping, you know, fries in mayonnaise. What was that movie, The Whole Nine Yards? When they're up in Canada, Bruce Willis and Matthew Perry. And, you know, he orders, you know, French fries, which was, you know, treats or whatever. Home treats. And they bring him mayonnaise. And he's just like, Bruce Willis is like, what the fuck is this shit? Well, you bought me French fries. Where's the goddamn ketchup? You know, mayonnaise?
See, I've become I got nothing for ketchup. I mean, just, I don't.
I know you said you would eat that first so that you guys don't.
Yeah.
And typically, you know what? I don't. There's certain things, like right now, I have my fries.
So a few minutes ago, you said Mama's got her blue cheese. Now, this is something way, 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 way back when I immigrated to Morgantown, West Virginia, which is within the cultural gravitational field of Pittsburgh. I was introduced to fries and blue cheese.
Oh, yes.
Stop it.
Let me tell you something.
They do.
No.
There's a place in Pittsburgh called the O, and it's up near the campus of Pitt. And there's three things that happen there. There's fries and cheese whiz, which I find disgusting. Which is
disgusting.
Which is odd, me being, you know, the with the goo and the problem. Right. But the other two things are fries and blue cheese, which you can't stop me, and fries and brown gravy, otherwise known as gravy fries, as in use it in a sentence. Alex, it's Yins want to go down to Eaton Park and get some gravy fries? Fries and brown gravy. Good stuff.
I've heard of it, and I'm thinking, you know, that's probably just like this, because I love mashed potatoes and gravy, so it's probably just, you know, like mashed potatoes and gravy, but the potatoes are fried. I just came to that, because I'm also getting, speaking of potatoes and dairy, the first time my wife and I went out for breakfast, and she ordered hash browns, and she ordered a side of butter, and I'm like, didn't know what she was going to, I didn't even think about it because she had toast, so I thought maybe she just wanted more butter for her toast because, you know, they never give you enough butter. And she proceeded to put the butter on the hash brown. And I looked at her and I'm like,
yeah, well, why not?
In the world?
Yeah.
And then she said, it's a potato. You wouldn't yell, say anything to me if I was putting butter on a baked potato. And at that point, I just had to shut up.
Yeah, sometimes you do. Sometimes you do, and you're getting, you know, you're getting all kinds of pushback from Canada. Asa just said, "Oh, come on, no effing fry dipped in mayo? You kidding me? Crush up some fresh garlic and mix it well with the mayo. Dip a hot fry in it and enjoy. That's my own version of hillbilly gourmet right there. Make a priest want to break some stained glass."
No,
still not convinced.
Look, let me tell you, in all fairness. So everybody won't say, well, you just never tried it. You just don't know. You just don't understand. And once you try it, you'll be fine. I have tried it.
Bet you'd eat it in Belgium. You know, that's where they're real serious about it.
Well, I've seen that. It'll be, if you guys know when I'll ever go back to Europe again. But no, I tried it. I tried it. And it's like, okay, get it out your head that it's mayonnaise. Let it go. With the garlic and stuff and all that, let it go. You can do it, Tracy. You can do it. I tried it, and I was like, yep.
Nope.
No.
That's mayonnaise.
It's mayonnaise.
Lyonnaise, like, Dijonnaise, Hollandaise. How are you on Hollandaise?
Hollandaise, see, I can suck up some Hollandaise as long as it's coming with an egg Benedict. I could do Hollandaise as long as there's the Canadian bacon. See, I'm giving you props to Canada.
Yeah,
I could do some Canadian bacon, and as long as it's underneath there's some Canadian bacon, poached eggs, and an English muffin, I will fuck up some Hollandaise sauce. I will do that. Speaking of Hollandaise sauce, oh my God! Well, okay, so now I guess we are fully now entrenched into the food porn section of this conversation. So there's and if Billable Rick is listening, he'll know. There's a place in L.A., it's like an arboretum, and it's called Descanso Garden. Very lovely place. I've never been. I've always threatened to go, and I've never been. But they're opening, starting October the 1st, they're opening a restaurant that's only open for brunch. And let me read you the menu. Because, I'm into torturing you. Because you mess with me about fucking mayonnaise, so it's on me now. So, listen to this. Brioche French toast.
Yes.
Applewood smoked bacon whipped. And see, when I heard this, when I read this menu, I instantly thought of you. So, are you ready?
Go.
Applewood smoked bacon whipped, bacon butter.
Yeah.
Vermont maple syrup and powdered sugar.
Shoot.
You know what got me for you was the whipped bacon butter.
Yeah, I know. That got me. No, I had to mute the mic and weep a couple of tears of sheer joy.
I inside Cody did it. That one tear goes down. When I read that, I just said, only this is another reason why I need to get Bob out here. And here's another one. Okay, listen to this one.
Yes.
Fried chicken and beignets. Buttermilk fried chicken, powdered sugar beignets, Vermont maple syrup.
Oh, sure. That's kind of a take on chicken and waffles then, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I can go there. So, wait. Yeah. So when you were in New Orleans, did you get to go to Café Du Monde? Did you get to have the beignets?
Dude, come on, player.
Okay, just checking. It's not like I'm lacking in faith.
Oh, my God.
Damn hot, you blister your fingers picking them up. Yeah, those.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that chaps my, you know, red and large high about Café Du Monde is that they only serve you, three, which is ridiculous, because that means when you're having, when Jed and I, that means you got to order two orders, which means you're eating six. And you know good and goddamn well they were going to eat three each.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why at least when Krispy Kreme has the Hot Now sign on, you get a dozen.
Let me tell you. Because, you know, Krispy Kremes are slowly going. We finally got them, and now I think they're leaving California. So whenever I have a chance to drive by a Krispy Kreme, you know what I'm going to do.
Oh,
and I
keep that, my lights, that light's on. You're stopping.
Button. Oh, man. I have busted a U-turn in the middle of the street when I would drive by.
Oh, my last Hot Now was a year ago now when Ferg and I went down for the race in Darlington. Because right across from our little no-tail motel was, no, it wasn't across, it was next to it, was a Krispy Kreme.
Mm.
I think that was down in Florence, South Carolina.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
And it doesn't work. There's no such thing as... Yeah, I love the filled ones, but there's no such thing as a Hot Now, because those things have to cool off before they can inject them. It's just a plain glaze.
You can't. And hot jelly. Yeah. Oh, speaking of chicken and waffles, we're not going to be able to make it to the fair this year because it's just too much of a walk and it's too fucking hot. But L.A. County Fair, they have somebody that has made... So they fry up a chicken, you know, finger or whatever, but it's kind of long. It's like they use it for like a popsicle stick. And when after they fry the chicken, they put it inside it. So they open and, you know, do a waffle. So they, you know, put a batter inside the waffle iron and then, you know, put the chicken popsicle stick inside of the waffle iron and make your, so you have your own walk around chicken and waffle pop.
Nice.
I said, that is genius. I mean, nothing better than street food. Nothing better than food you can eat and walk with. Because I figure if I could eat and walk with my food, then I'm that's a form of exercise, right?
Absolutely.
There's those things that I just thought about that. I was like, see, fuck you, I'm exercising. Yes, I'm probably eating a 2,000 calorie food item, and I would probably have to walk, and the only way I would have to be able to burn off any of those calories is to walk from here to, you know, to West Virginia.
Yeah, well,
but damn it.
Hey, I got a note from Sparky, Tracy. He says, ask Tracy about the tail of the pickup truck.
The tail of the pickup truck or the tail of the pup?
The tail of the pup truck.
Oh yes. So
I thought for a minute. I thought PU. That you here in Appalachistan, PUP means pickup truck.
Well, back in the day, there was we had a lot of these restaurants where it was shaped, like the Brown Derby and all that. So there was a hot dog stand called Tail of the Pup, and it was shaped like a hot dog, and they had the best fucking hot dog ever. And so, of course, you know, California being, Los Angeles being what it is, you know, anything that's cool and old has to go because of course it was in prime real estate in West LA. It's kind of like in that border of West LA, Beverly Hills, West Hollywood. So, you know, we're talking prime real estate. And so, I think it closed in the mid 70s or whenever it closed. but they had, oh my God, the best hot dogs ever. And so what I you know, there's a thing called Eat LA, and every so often I get these, you know, these random, you know, newsfeed things about food, because I get food porn as a hashtag, so now I get, you know, different food things. And so now they're bringing back Killer the Pup, and it's a food truck, and it's actually going to be, they signed a year's lease, pretty much at the exact spot where the original Killer the Pup was located.
Ah, okay.
It's those kind of the hot dogs that you, you know, you bite into and they snap because of the casing.
Oh yeah, like the snap of a good Vienna beef dog in Chicago, or I might add, the snap that comes with the natural casing of Kaneka sausage.
I knew you were going through the Kaneka sausage.
Because it snaps. I mean, it snaps like a twig cracking.
It's so funny because when I saw the article, Jan had just walked into the bedroom where I was pretending to fold clothes. I am still not a domestic artist. It's terrible. I try. That's why I have to get a cleaning lady.
Pretending to fold clothes.
Uh-huh. Pretending to fold clothes. Because I suck at it. So I was reading Jan about it, and she almost started. I think there was, you know, that tear, that one single tear. Because she, she's definitely older than me, but she actually, you know, actually Jan actually grew up, I mean, you guys have heard of Pink's Hot Dog.
Oh, yeah, oh, Pink's, so absolutely, yeah.
Okay, well, she grew up with the kids. That's the neighborhood Jan grew up in. So she, you know, nice Jewish family. But Killer the Pup, I am very excited. And when I told Jan, she's like, when we going? And I said, well, baby, we'll wait because, you know, anybody that knows about Killer the Pup, they're going to be there. And I can already see the parking and the lines. And you'll get exasperated, and we'll just, because they, like I said, they signed a year's lease, so we're thinking I'll probably sometime later on in the year once the cure has died down. Because I don't, that's why I don't go to Pink's. I actually finally went to Pink's, it was years ago, and because I would drive by, you know, typically in my cab late at night, and there'll be a line around the corner, and I'm like, I am not standing in line for fucking food. I can't do it. So one day I happened to drive by, and there was a line, but it wasn't like, okay, I'm not doing this. There's maybe 10 people in line. I'm like, okay. When the line was not wrapped around the building, I'm like, okay, I can handle a line not wrapped around the building. So I went, and it was a good hot dog. Old school, you know, bite in, there's snaps, and the chili's pretty good, but it's not like I'm going to stand in line.
And you know what? I was going to mention that. You know how I can tell that autumn is coming? Because my chili gene has been triggered. It happened just this morning. It was coming up on noon, and it just out of the blue, something hit me, and I went, I want a bowl of good chili. Now, by bowl of good chili, we're not talking about Wendy's, because that is not good chili.
No, that is not good chili.
And we're not talking about anything that comes out of a can.
No.
That's not good chili either. Now, my buddy.
No, we're talking chili con carne.
My buddy Oscar, now this may seem a little out there, my buddy Oscar Aguilar, who hails from El Salvador and is without a doubt one of the most brilliant chefs in West Virginia, is cooking now at a place in Fayetteville called The Station, which is yummy. Does Tracy do chicken livers conversation?
Tracy does do chicken livers.
Okay, so he came up with something there, really, really thin slice of baguette toasted, with his take on a chicken liver pate, with thin slices of pickled onions, and a little bit of cilantro and parsley, and they just serve that as a snack. and you can go crazy on
that.
But Oscar makes a white bean chicken chili. Oh, and it's righteous. I mean, it's got tang and tart and the chickenness, and he's got some chicken broth in there and some chilies and white beans, and it's righteous. But no, chili cook-offs and things like that are such a mixed bag. It's such a dice roll, and I've just got to get to the point where I can. It's just so damned involved to make it, but I got to make my chili soon. Or I'm just going to, no.
Yeah, it's about that time for us as well. Now, obviously you don't mind beans in your chili, nor do I, but my wife, not so much with the beans and the chili. So I have to make an all-meat chili, which is fine. I can do it. I just throw everything in a crock pot and leave.
Well, yeah, you can always have your beans done on the side and just add your beans to your chili.
No, it has to cook. The beans have to cook in the chili.
I'm trying to find a way forward here, Tracy.
Well, see, but the thing is, see, unlike my wife, I'm not persnickety except when it comes to mayonnaise. But back before you even got a chance to say it,
beat me to it.
But my wife is, there's persnickety and then there's my wife. So, the whole, nothing worse at the Forbes household when it comes to time for me to decide, because I do the majority of the cooking. Even before Jan had the surgery, I did the majority of the cooking. The problem is, what will Jan eat? That should really be the name of a game show. What will Jan eat?
What will my wife eat?
What will my wife eat? Because I will come up with stuff, and I don't want it. Okay, well, what do you want? I don't know. And when she says I don't know, it's just like, fuck. So, it's nothing worse. And so that's why when it comes to what she will eat, then she's like, well, what do you want? I'm like, I don't care. As long as you're happy. Because there's nothing worse than when I cook something, and like the other day, I was watching something, and I had chicken, I had the North rice size, and I said, ooh, and I got I sauteed some chicken, olive oil, and garlic. I made the North rice size. I threw that together. Then I sliced up some great tomatoes and some fresh basil and topped that off with mozzarella cheese. That shit was amazing.
How could it not
Alex
be?
And I were... But the wife said, I don't like it. I don't like hot tomatoes. And I'm like, Jan, what is spaghetti sauce?
Don't go there. You're so new at this being married thing.
No. I didn't say it out loud.
Oh, okay. Yep. All right.
No, I'm not stupid. There's a lot of things I am, but stupid ain't one of them. And I said, okay. So, no, my response was, what would you like me to make you?
Oh, you're fast tracking. You're good.
Yeah, it's like, what would you like me to make you? I'm sorry that you didn't think this. Now, did she taste it? No.
So I'm guessing cream stewed tomatoes on homemade biscuits is out.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
You like those?
Say what again?
You like
those? No. It reminds me, let me tell you, my grandmother used to make tomato.
There's no mayonnaise in it now, damn it.
I probably would if I tasted it. But my grandmother I don't know if this was a depression meal or something, but she would get tomatoes and mix it with bread and like bake it. It was, I don't know what the fuck that was. And when you said cream something tomatoes, over biscuits, I just had a PTSD moment. It's those things that you haven't thought about in a billion years, and then somebody will say something and it'll trigger something, and you start breaking out in sweat and stuff like that. So, it's one of those times. It's times like this when I'm thinking about it that I wish I had to talk more to my grandmother. I'd asked her what made you come up with these things. But then again, I was raised as, you know, old school, and you didn't question adults. You just sat there. It was like there was no such thing. This is one of those things why it's kind of hard for me to adjust with Jan with her persnickety shit, because there was no such thing as being persnickety for me. You know, and I'm pretty sure your parents were the same way, or your mother, when she cooked, that was all that was there.
Yeah, this ain't no restaurant. You know, this is not a restaurant.
My mother would say, "I'm not a short order cook."
Well, we got to do something here, Tracy, because I just had a note from for Brother Deacon Asa. He said, "Man, I had a cold slice of pizza at 7:30 this morning before I left for work. That was the last thing I ate. You're killing me with the goddamn food porn. I won't be tuning out because of your politics, but let me tell you. Well, hey, Brother Deacon Asa, if you need, I can tell you how to vote. Okay? I mean, just saying."
Oh, you
I wanted to ask you about something, because I did get a note from you last night, didn't? Not a call, but a note.
Oh, about the bitch, about
Miss Tommy Lauren. Yeah.
And that was what I was going to segue to. Perfect.
Miss White Privilege America.
Because see, here's what I should have said. Because see, first of all, if that story was really true, white privilege aside, there are white women that are stupid, but very few are stupid enough to roll up on three sisters, regardless of the situation, and actually say something that's stupid. But then again, had she done that, the sisters would have had enough about themselves not to slap her stupid, because they would know the consequences of their actions, you know, no matter how much they wanted to snatch the bitch bald headed. So I've come up, so that's, you know, now. So, and you know how we, as a woman or anybody, I shouldn't use the C word?
Yes.
And so I've come up with a way to say the C word without saying the C word. So whenever I say bundt cake.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's what I mean.
Well, I brought up Miss White Privilege America, because she's gonna have to crank up her wambulance and get her pout rage on again.
About the knee, taking the knee, and that was in your neck of the woods.
Yes.
Right?
Volleyball players for West Virginia Polytechnic University, which is just down the mountain from me, by the way. Three members of their volleyball team took a knee during the national anthem. And Kiana Morrow said, "Kaepernick's exercising his right to choose to sit or stand, so you have to recognize that he's got that right." And so she and two of her teammates took a knee. And she said, "I hope that it just makes people reconsider before they judge someone for something."
Yep.
Meanwhile, because WCHS-TV has to have both sides of the story, and this is just precious, they reached out to Tiffany Revis. No, really.
Oh,
her name's Tiffany.
Wait. Why does that last name sound familiar?
Well, I don't know. But it's the Tiffany part that clued me.
Yeah.
You stand for the national anthem regardless. It's kind of like a respect thing for everyone who served here especially.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm... I mean, I mentioned it, but I really would like an answer, Tracy. I thought Anchors Away was the anthem of the United States Navy. I thought Off We Go Into the Wild Blue Yonder was the anthem of the United States
Air Force.
The Halls of Montezuma and all of that stuff. That's the Marines, right?
The Marines.
And the thing about the caissons with the Army.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't know that the only reason we stood for the national anthem was because we had become a full-on fascist militaristic state.
Well, but did you get that memo, Bob?
I did not get the memo.
Apparently. Well, you need to pay more attention, son. Obviously. But that rant that she went on yesterday about, as a member of the LGBTQ community, and as a black person, and as a woman, I find her so offensive about, well, you know, at least she doesn't live in a country where they can throw gay people off the... Bitch, have you not seen what happens to transgender people?
Yeah, because they do kind of kill them here, right?
Right. Or just people...
the Pulse nightclub thing? That didn't happen in Tehran, did it?
That happened in Orlando. Disney World fucking country, dude.
Happiest place on earth.
So happy in this motherfucking place on earth, you fucking butt cake. See how I did that? See how I did that?
It works for me.
I think that should be our new call to arms for the Horn family. Because she is that C word, but because we are respectable and refined motherfuckers, we try to rise above.
I can't wait for her to crank up the wambulance for this.
You were playing that, I was fortunately off the freeway, and I just did pull over because I had to get gas, and I was just I wanted to get those just a couple things in before the show ended. So, but it was just like. I was so undone. It was bad enough about her, but, these people, did you see, I posted it on the Horn family page, the white about how, because white people are so fragile and how to make sure their feelings don't get hurt when you talk about racism. It's hilarious. I don't know if you can play the audio, but it's classic. And it basically, talks about how, as people of color, how it's our job to make sure we don't hurt white people's feelings when we call them on their racism. And in such subtle ways.
Yeah,
like
I love your hair. Can I touch it?
Can I touch it? And like, no, bitch. I get violent. I wear locks, so I get that. I don't get as much as I used to, because I think people just look. If a white person approaches me in the wrong way, I just give them the look like, don't say it. Don't even think it in my presence. Just walk away, so I don't have to floor your ass. Because I'm sorry, if you touch my hair, you have assaulted my person. You are assaulting me. I did not give you permission to touch my hair.
Actually, it's not an assault. If there's an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature, that's a battery.
And Dan and I were at a restaurant a few months back, and this was an African, a black couple, had the cutest little baby. And white privilege. This white woman just walked up and picked up the baby. Oh, she's so cute. And I'm like,
what are you doing?
What are you doing? And a lot of times black people, we're in such shock that that it's just like black people just don't say anything because we don't want the situation to turn ugly. But did you see where they write it was a salon, but it was silent, it's just sometimes it's just so much easier not to say anything. And that's that silence, because we're so, because we know. That if we say the wrong thing or react or jump or something, then the whole situation can turn very ugly. So we always have to have to pick our battles as to when we're going to get into somebody's face. But isn't it so ridiculous that we have to do all that? It is just that people are so so entitled and so wrapped in the shroud of privilege. How's that? That they feel that they're not doing anything wrong, and that's the problem. I don't even think it's willful ignorance. It's just the way things are. But when you call people on it, then they just so, it's like, well, I'm not a racist. I'm like, you may not think you're a racist, but you are. Just because, again, people have the misconception that the only way you're a racist is if you, you know, ride around on horses with hooves on burning crosses. Yeah, you are a racist, but there's those things when you expect for me to do certain things and act a certain way because you're white, and you're just offended because I don't. Yeah.
Ta-da! Yeah.
Ta-da! And if you don't, and then when I say something that I, you know, I hurt your feelings. So, bitch, you know what? Damn your feelings.
There was just everything about that account last night. The woman went a running to find poor Tommy. I mean, was she wearing her Supergirl suit? I mean, that's a big ass stadium in Dallas. Yeah, how do you run to Tommy to find Tommy to tell her your tale of woe?
Whoa, and fucking, and because like I said, I'm sitting there listening to her, and it was like I said, ever so grateful that I was off the freeway, because traffic was horrible yesterday, and I was just like, oh my God. But when she was going on and on about, you know, the girl's little hurt feelings, and you know, it was, you know, the tears welling up in her eyes, and you know, I'm pretty sure she had on curls, so she was clutching the bitches, and I'm like, when you come to me when you have, whether somebody said white girl tears, come to me when you have some real problems. And again, I'm not saying that just because you're white, that you, the whole world is your oyster and, you know, the sun rises and sets on your ass and all that.
No, but in that woman's case, I'm willing to. No, wait. Because I want to be fair about this. And I used the phrase last night, Tracy. Because when there's some black dude, especially an athlete who does something wrong, white sports journalists and, you know, white wing broadcasters will refer to him as a man child.
Right.
So is Miss White Privilege America? Yeah, she's a woman child, isn't she?
She's not. I won't even call her a woman child. She's a spoiled little brat.
And I mean, how much is there any way to quantify, Tracy? Is there any way to quantify the amount of privilege one has to have as an inexperienced 24-year-old who knows next to nothing about life on planet Earth that she can lecture every person of color in the United States?
And see that again.
Let's remember there's. Know, There's nonagenarians in North Carolina who were born at a time when people of color couldn't vote, fought for the right to vote, and have now had that right to vote taken away from them.
Take it away.
Same in Texas, same in Wisconsin, and Tommy Lauren in her bleach blonde white privilege is going to lecture them, because that's what a 92-year-old woman who knows what the fight is all about needs is some good white-splaining from Tommy Lauren.
Right, and again, it's like you said, I am not, I don't do well with stupid. I don't do well with people telling me that I should be, you know, you live in the greatest country in the world. How dare you be upset? Like when Michelle Obama said, you know, for the first time in my life, or, you know, I love my country, but now I'm proud of my country. And, oh, well, she's just up. So why is it that we don't get to be angry? Why is it that Native Americans don't get to be angry? Why is it that we just have to suck the shit up and eat it like a pound of horse manure with a whipped cream and cherry topping? I am so tired of being told that I should not be upset about the way my people and my gender and my whatever as being treated in this country, and I should be okay with it. Well, you live in America, and like somebody said, I think you said this yesterday, or maybe with somebody else. Isn't the greatest part of being a patriot is showing that you still want to be a part of this country, but it's okay to call out its ills?
Yes.
To me, that is the highest form of patriotism, because that's a true patriot, because we're doing what the founding fathers did when we're like, you know what, we got to work on this shit. We don't like the way things are going, and we need to do something about this shit. So let's do it this way. Let's try it this way. That's why we got the fuck out of England and whatever, and we did all this shit and blah 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 blah. But the thing is, I like the fact that I live in a country that I can't speak truth to power. But you know, in Tommy Lauren's world, I'm overstepping. I'm being uppity. Did I say it right? Uppity.
Uppity. Yeah.
You know,
you said that entirely too right.
Yeah, you uppity, whining Negro, you. What is your problem?
But I get, is Tommy Lauren, is she too easy? Is she low hanging fruit? I mean, when you do something that unutterably stupid, is she getting more attention than she deserves?
Oh yeah, I mean, of course she's getting, but that's the point. That's the point. She's like you said, low hanging fruit. She's that, you know, she's that person that you're like, because she has that mean girl thing going about her, so it's easy for us. And we're not picking on her, or maybe we are. No, we're not. We're critiquing her. Is that a But it's like, it's not too easy, because see, the thing is, she's setting herself up to be this way. She wants the attention, be it good or bad or what have you. So you know what? You want it, I'm going to give it to you full throttle. But I'm just tired of these people who, they don't fucking get it. They're so happy in their privilege that they're like, well, you know, don't be, you know, why are you black people angry? You got a black president. Why are you so mad?
Oh, speaking of our black president. Speaking of our black president.
I heard you were going to say something about him. What did Barack Hussein Obama do today?
Well, you know how it has been the policy of this radio program for a very long time now, that there needed to be a cabinet level position of the Secretary of Jesus Barack. Remember?
Yes.
Well, we've got one of those moments. We haven't had one of those in a while, but we got one of those moments.
No, we haven't.
But it's also an indictment of the for-profit media. Now, you know that with regard to the there's a language moment here too. What is going on in North Dakota is not a protest, and I got schooled on this earlier today. Not in a mean way, in a nice way. What's going on in North Dakota is not a protest. It is a protective action.
Yes.
Okay, they're not protesting it. They're not protesting the pipeline. They are trying to protect what is theirs from being taken away and destroyed. So they are not protesters, they are protectors. And I will try to make sure that I refer to them as such. But anyway you slice it, the for-profit media coverage is something approaching nil. Unless maybe, say, the Wall Street Journal is writing some snide piece of crap in defense of the pipeline company.
No, I guess so.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we good there, Tracy?
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, no, and like you said, it's because, and like you said, the for-profit media, they're not going to cover it.
And
because,
they're not covering it worth a damn. I saw somebody remark on one of my Facebook pages the other day, or one of my posts the other day, that this has got to be a leading nominee for one of those, what's the name of the award? Project Censored, Uncovered Stories of the Year. I mean, the for-profit media are dropping the ball. I mean, it's like their hands are greased. They're dropping the ball so much. So we're not getting anything resembling responsible coverage. And lo and behold, the President of the United States had to go all the way to Laos before a member of the international media, somebody who knows a little bit about oppression, repression, abuse, that kind of, because the president is in Laos and he's doing the right thing. He announced, more American commitment to finding the unexploded ordnance that we dropped on Laos. And it's worth noting, we dropped more ordnance on Laos than we dropped on Germany and Japan combined during the Second World War. People die every year by getting close to cluster bombs or stepping on or et cetera. And it's still happening. But so he went over there and he said, we're going to do more to make this right.
Okay.
So good thing, right?
Good on you.
But along the way, he stops and takes some questions. And a woman, not a member of the Merkin for-profit media, but instead a member of international media, does this. You ready? Here we go.
I'm ready.
Okay, go ahead, right here.
My name is Alice Matthew. I'm from the state of Sabah in Malaysia. My question is in solidarity of... with the indigenous people in not my country, but in America itself. I just heard recently that this group of people is fighting to protect their ancestral land against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Yeah, so my question is, what in your capacity, what can you do to ensure the protection of the ancestral land, the supply of clean water, and also in environmental justice is upheld?
Yeah. Well,
okay, so let's deal with the question first. One, it's a woman from Malaysia.
Right.
She has not found out about it through the for-profit media. She hasn't found out about it from Reuters or the Associated Press. She's found out about it through social media. Because the for-profit media won't do their damn jobs.
Nope.
Now, she asks the President of the United States, who has an entire small phalanx of aides and advisors, whose job is to keep him up to speed on what's happening, domestically in the United States. Yeah. He's got another phalanx whose job is to keep him up to speed on international affairs. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So here comes the answer. And this, it ain't funny, but it's kind of hockey puckish. Because it's sufficient to sort of engender a little bit of hooting and hollering.
Great question.
Great question.
As many of you know, the way that Native Americans were treated was tragic.
Verb tense problem, Tracy. The way, as many of you know, the way that Native Americans were treated was tragic.
Like that word. Was and were. Like it's not still happening.
Precisely. It's something that's in the past. It's not going on right now. So by virtue of the way he uses that language, he excludes what's happening out there with the Dakota Access Pipeline from being the bad things that have been done in the past to Native American peoples. That's step one. Not were and was, Mr. President, are and is.
And one of the priorities that I've had as president is restoring an honest and generous and respectful relationship with Native American tribes.
Okay, that's as may be. We'll take generous as read.
And so we have made an unprecedented investment in meeting regularly with the tribes, helping them design ideas and plans for economic development, for education, for health that is culturally appropriate for them. And, you know, this issue of ancestral lands and helping them preserve their way of life is something that we have worked very hard on. Now, okay, go ahead, right here.
Wait. I didn't mean to do that, but we'll come back to it in a second.
I have a question. I'm your moment.
Okay, just real quick. Do indigenous tribal peoples need help? Are they asking for help? Or are they asking just that what belongs to them be left to them?
And that's my question, because it's like, wasn't it bad enough that they were already removed from their lands in the first place, they were rightfully there, and put on reservations and whatnot and so forth. So you already took a step away from them once. You put them on these, and now this is what their protected land is. And now you're still messing with them? Seriously? Okay, go ahead.
I think we are. And, okay, so I had to reset. I'm not sure where we are.
Health that is culturally appropriate for them. And, you know, this issue of ancestral lands and helping them preserve their way of life is something that we have worked very hard on. Now, some of these issues are caught up with laws and treaties, and so I can't give you details on this particular case. I'd have to go back to my staff and find out how are we doing on this one.
Really? Really? You got to go back to your staff and find out how we're doing on this one? What are we doing on this one? Are we doing on this one? Are there any treaties involved?
Yeah.
Are there any broken treaties involved?
Yeah.
And I mean, this is just kind of pathetic. I mean, I'm not going all wingnut here. It's just, as a progressive person, I want more. In the waning weeks and months of his presidency, I want him to find something inside him, because, you know, every now and then he'll come out and he'll show how much he really doesn't give up anymore about the right wing and idiot. I mean, he did this. He did everything short of calling out Matt Lauer by name today.
Yeah, he was not happy with Mr. Matt Lauer.
But we'll finish this little quote here. Just stand by. Now, dang it.
Laws and treaties and so I can't give you details on this particular case. I'd have to go back to my staff and find out how are we doing on this one. But what I can tell you is that we have actually restored more rights among Native Americans to their ancestral lands, sacred sites, waters, hunting grounds. We have done a lot more work on that over the last 8 years than we had in the previous 20, 30 years. And this is something that I hope will continue as we go forward. But it was an excellent question.
Yeah, it was an excellent question that didn't get answered.
It didn't get answered. Because the simple answer was, the question was, what are you doing?
But see, here's the problem. He can't give a straight answer to that because, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is always lingering out there. Oh, yeah. It's obvious. He doesn't know how to be a president. If you know how to be a president, you tell him to tell those damned Indians to get out of the way, go back to the casino, and let them build the pipeline. I mean, who cares about it? I mean, hey, God, I mean, it's dead people, right? Dig them up.
Right.
And it's just frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating because it's the tribal lands, the burial ground. It's sacred. Like, you know, I think I posted a meme or, you know, they showed, you know, a veteran's cemetery. And it's like, you wouldn't build a pipeline through this burial ground. Why? What's the difference?
I mean, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't let a pipeline go through George Washington's grave.
Right, or Arlington National Cemetery.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, that's some hallowed ground. That's got some important dead people in it.
You know, it wouldn't even be a question. And I'm like, what? Are you crazy? That's not going to happen. But, you know, just Native people. What are they, you know?
There's so many dead Native people all over this country. I mean, my goodness gracious, you could probably never build a damn pipeline. Oh, wait a minute, really? Let's think about that.
Really, exactly. The same with the slave burial ground, because you'll never know about unless you somebody starts to dig it up.
Yeah, you know, finds it by accident or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, you're costing us money because blah, blah. I say, you know, we hold nothing, well, I was about to say we hold nothing sacred in this country. No, we do. But if it depends on this is when I start looking for words. Yes, we hold certain things sacred as long as it's the right people.
Yeah, and it's interesting what right rhymes with. Because,
yeah.
For instance, I remember a few years ago down in Alabama when they were having a sure enough hissy over a bust of Nathan Bedford Forrest, you know, the father of the Klan. I guess it was around 2012, they were having a plum hissy because a bust of Nathan Bedford Forrest, the father of the Klan, had been stolen off of his tomb in an old historic white people cemetery in Selma, Alabama. And then back in 2015, a little over a year ago, Birmingham News posted, 3 years after a bronze bust of Nathan Bedford Forrest was stolen from a Selma cemetery, another has taken its place. The United Daughters of the Confederacy and the Friends of Forrest held an unveiling ceremony for the new bust on Saturday at Old Live Oak Cemetery, the Selma Times-Journal reported. The 7-foot monument honors Forrest as a lieutenant general for the Confederacy.
7 foot?
Yes. During the Civil War and refers to him as Defender of Selma and Wizard of the Saddle. Well, he was a Wizard of the Saddle, a Grand Wizard of the Saddle, as a matter of fact.
Wizard of the Saddle.
And meanwhile, way down in the story, black residents protested and called for the bust to be removed. Attorney Faye Rose Touré of Selma said, Jews would not tolerate a statue of Hitler in their neighborhood, and what they put up in our neighborhood back then was pretty much the same thing. Descendants of those who enslaved us insist on honoring someone with Klan connections.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, so, you know, there was full-on
What's
conniption over that.
It's like you said, you wouldn't put up a statue of Hitler in this country, period. Anywhere. Well...
But then there's that big ass ugly statue of, I think it's Nathan Bedford Forrest there just south of Nashville on I-65. Looks like he was carved out of margarine. It's disgusting. But you know, it's all a matter of and you know what? This even goes to academic stuff, Tracy, because I worked many years ago on an archaeological dig in West Tennessee, and there was an active conversation taking place then among the people who were digging as to whether we ought to be rooting around inside an Indian mound. And the general consensus was, you know, we probably shouldn't.
Wait, you said many years ago. Is that when you could actually bend your knees?
Shut up.
Hey, I'm at the same boat.
Bend my knees. That was back when I could bend my knees. That was back when I could see my feet.
I haven't seen my feet. Well, now I do because they're constantly swollen.
but that's the thing. I mean, I know from my experience in the South, is in the South, and every spring, when the farmers turn their fields, and I mean we're talking about big, long fields, huge fields. Arrowhead collectors will ask permission to just walk through. And invariably, you know, they'll come out with 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 points. And that's been going on for, 300 years. And it's still yielding up these artifacts. Yeah, oh, hell yeah.
Really?
I mean, we're talking about talking about evidence of settlement and occupation that are literally... 10 millennia old. That's a lot of stone tools. And
okay, I just want to say, if I start choking or throwing up in the next 5 minutes, I'll let you know why, because I'm driving by and getting ready to drive by Ronald Reagan Museum.
So. Ew, I don't even want to be on the air with you when you do it. I don't want to be that close to the nasty old corpse of Ronald Reagan.
Oh, God.
Oh, by the way, 8:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 8:15, and that one's on me because I read it in a news story. So
about Hitler?
Yeah. We'll have to check in. We'll have to check. Damn it, Gerald. And find out who won the pool tonight from Brother Deacon Gerald.
It's been a while since there was a reference to, the Fuhrer.
Well, I mean, that's why people gamble on the pool. You never know what it,
And it's not your fault because
there's 180 opportunities every evening. It's kind of like the lottery, except you don't win anything.
Except you don't, if you don't win, if you can't win, if you don't play, well, again, I like my money. I work way too hard for it. The lottery is just something that I, every so often, when the jackpot gets really big, we all fantasize.
Right,
I might
because,
drop $5
because, a half,
on it.
Because a half a billion is worth a dollar. 15 million, not so much. Yeah.
Right. 15 million.
Jump change.
That's something I could just go, to the safe deposit box to pick up. It's tough change. I got 15 mil lying around. That's why I'm driving a cab.
You can't even buy a decent 300-foot yacht for $15 million. What are you talking about?
So here's those crazy things that I have, these ideas, because I actually, I think about what I would do for me, but mostly I think about what I would do for other people. And of course, one of me, it's so funny because I'm not really all that close to my family to make me crazy. So one of the first people that I thought about doing for was you. because every time like when it starts to work.
Uh-oh, I think we lost Tracy. Maybe the ghost of Ronnie Raygun took her down. But we've got about, 40 minutes of conversation, a little less than 40 minutes of conversation when you think about wrapping up time. Call it 35 minutes of conversation left in the program if you want to jump in. Maybe Tracy's back. Hold on. Yeah, okay, are you back there? Are you there, Tracy?
Yeah, and it's because, you know why? Because I was on a Reagan.
Well, see, the ghost of Reagan reached out and killed your connection. That being the case, we'll make a little room for further conversation. But this has been a dandy. This has been world class, Miss Tracy, and I do appreciate it.
Well, like I said, I just wanted to say that my goal is one day to become a billionaire. So I can fund the horn, so you can have your solar panels, your wind turbines, your generators, and all that. So you don't ever have to worry about going off the air because
it's
cold.
I'm rooting for you. I really, really am.
Hey. So on that note. Good night.
You gonna be around for Friday on the front porch?
Yes, I will. I'm gonna try to do the Friday on the front porch, and I think this week
they got her again. Okay, well, another call coming in, so we'll go in that direction. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob.
What are you doing?
I'm just sitting here marveling at technology that allows me to talk to civilized people.
I don't overstate your case, Ron. It's not.
Well, you didn't gag and puke when I mentioned garlic mayonnaise.
Damn, I love me some garlic mayonnaise. You know, they make garlic mayonnaise at Secret Sandwich Society.
Yeah.
You can get it with your fries.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Which are, by the way, probably the best fries in, the entire state of West Virginia. You've had them.
I've had them. I wanted to bring to the notice of the Horn family an interesting, enlightened moment in the history of Canadian government today. Might have escaped the notice of even most Canadians. But the Minister of Justice put out a presser telling Canadians who were traveling to the U.S. in particular that they really should continue to pay attention to the current Canadian laws on the consumption of marijuana. And perhaps you don't want to mention that to U.S. border officials because they can turn you back. And the government will be legalizing marijuana, but please allow us to do it in a properly, orderly fashion, and then perhaps you can consume in Canada. But even if you do, don't tell the border guys. Now, this is a compassionate government. They got it right.
Well, can't we file that under don't make trouble for yourself?
Yeah. Don't be stupid, but I was marveling at hearing that over the radio and going, I was just in Ohio and West Virginia. I didn't hear anything like that over the radio.
Yeah, no, sorry. We don't do that. No, we run ads about this is your brain on dope.
Mm-hmm. Or the one I saw from some Christian organization about to theoretical woman who put her baby in a blender and poured vodka in and because she'd had one toke of marijuana.
It'll do that, especially the loud stuff. God.
And I'm sitting here in a vaguely depressed mood this evening.
What's wrong with you?
Well, it just occurred to me. Winter's coming. Again.
I got up in that mood this morning.
Mm. There's not a single red or yellow leaf to be seen. It's in the mid-80s. Humid as hell. Thunderstorms. And for some reason today I was thinking about winter. Blech.
Like I told you, I've already seen yellow and brown, and they weren't outliers. I mean,
yeah,
there's definitely color going on here, and the only thing I've come up with is it's an elevation thing. What's mean sea level where you are?
About 700.
Yeah, see, I got you by about 800 feet.
And over around Greenbrier County, around Lewisburg, where all the creative people live, I think it's 2,200 feet in Lewisburg.
Really?
Yep.
Because, you know, it's like 1,476 feet coming up Gauley Mountain. And then you go up a little higher, and, yeah, about you get at 16. And then by the time that road you took off out a couple of weekends ago, that'll get you up around 2,000 feet. And yeah, you'll get up above 2,000 feet when you're up on Sewell.
Yep. Well, Droop, I don't know if you've driven on 219 across Droop, but Droop is just over... I guess 3,000, 3,050 feet. Something
yeah, the
like
people
that.
Out west are laughing at us right now, Ron.
I know. But it is what it is. And, I mean, they're out west in Colorado, and they're going, what are these guys doing talking about legalizing marijuana?
By the way,
did they ever resolve what the hell all the dealers are supposed to do with the cash they make because the banks won't take it?
I think they're trying to. I'd have to get one of our Colorado correspondents on board for that. But I think they are trying to sort it out. But you know, the problem isn't it's more of a federal one than it is a state one.
Mm-hmm.
And the DEA, meanwhile, knows that. They're fighting the war on drugs, but they lost. But they're not prone to giving up their power because those DEA jobs are pretty cushy, GS, oh my God, type affairs.
Well, as long as you got a budget, you're going to spend it. That's the nature of a government department.
Yeah, and then you're going to ask for more.
Yep.
But yeah, the larger question is, do we need a DEA?
You might want to...
I mean, isn't the Coast Guard doing a relatively decent job? I mean, to the extent...
They're getting damn near 15% of it, Bob.
Hoo-wee!
You know, I got no problem with marijuana. I do have a problem with things like heroin that's laced with fentanyl and elephant tranquilizers. And,
yeah.
Poor old Huntington just getting absolutely hammered. And who are the sick bastards that are putting this stuff on the market in the first place? Yeah, go get it.
But the thing is, if you legalize and you regulate, you make going and getting it a hell of a lot easier. But then again, there's that little war in Afghanistan, and we can't do a damn thing about heroin production over there now because that's the Afghan government's province, and they seem to be okay with it.
Yep. No, it's part of their cultural heritage.
Maybe it's artisanal heroin.
By the way, Tracy beat me to one point I was going to make, is that nobody would be allowed to build a pipeline beneath Arlington Cemetery.
Or more practical, or more appropriately, perhaps through Arlington Cemetery.
Yeah. I saw a presser today from some oil and fracking outfit in Texas called Apache that discovered a well in West Texas, a field that they estimated 3 billion barrels of oil, recoverable oil, and 75 trillion cubic feet of natural gas.
Oh, God help the people there.
Why do we need to build more goddamn pipelines where people don't want them?
There's that. Or why do we need to take that stuff out of the earth? I mean, at any point in time, Ron, and I'm very, very sensitive to the realities of this. But at some point in time, don't we turn and focus? I mean, you know, the current number being bandied around is, okay, we're going to do something. You know, we'll have things in place by 2050, or and then the wild, you know, the wild-eyed radicals want something in place by 2030. Isn't there a point where we kind of grow up and say we've got to repurpose our energy economy in a different direction? I mean,
one would hope.
I don't know how you wean yourself off heroin, and I don't know how you wean yourself off oil.
I got an idea of how hard it is. I wean myself off tobacco.
Sure, rub it in. And you're still chomping that gum.
Yes, I am.
And that's not a criticism.
I know. I exchanged one vice for another. And my theory is that gradually, if I keep reducing the negative impacts of my vices, I might live as long as my mom did. But point being, 10% of the society is benefiting from a spirit of enlightenment. I don't think the next 50% care all that much, and 40% are really benefiting from oil, gas, cheap energy.
Well, let's look at that, Rana, from a comparative standpoint.
Now we're going to do numbers and ciphering and
no, we're not.
Oh, good.
Oh, speaking of numbers and ciphering, thanks going out to Charlene and Bob and to Matt. We have taken the fundraising goal down to $155. Thank you very kindly. Thank you. So if we could knock that out the rest of the way, just having a regular fundraising goal for Friday would be freaking awesome. But there's not going to be any ciphering or numbers involved. I'm just a question of the public good. Okay, so let's say, let's look at the Washington Metro. You've been to D.C. I've been to D.C. Lots of people have been to D.C.
Yeah.
It's a pretty nice system.
It works, yeah.
And they had to tear up a hell of a lot of stuff. They had to tear up a hell of a lot. That thing goes all the way out to Dulles now.
Yep.
And you gotta make a bit of a mess putting in a system like that. Agreed?
Yeah, it's going on in Ottawa right now. We're putting one in, tunnel under downtown. The whole damn place is messed up. It's about $4 billion worth of light rail transit and metro. Yeah.
But there has been, and I think it is, I think it's an unassailable matter. There has been a determination that is in the public good. That, for instance, in a place like Washington, D.C. or Ottawa, the entire community benefits from a reduction in, say, above ground automotive traffic. Congestion, right. That's not to say D.C. isn't still congested, because, oh my God, it is. I can only imagine what it would be if the metro weren't there. So, you know, and some historic, if you do it right, you go carefully and you go gently and you try not to create too much cultural wreckage, and everybody benefits. Now, extending that same concept into the future, if we in the United States would get serious about nationwide passenger rail and could do it without being ham-fisted about it, again, that would be in the public good, because it would benefit all the public, or something approaching all the public. There's no way you can make that argument, Ron, about the Dakota Access Pipeline. The only people that are going to benefit from the Dakota Access Pipeline are the people who are wrecking the living bejesus out of northwest North Dakota, the people at the refinery that it's going to go to, the shipping companies that are going to transship the oil all over the globe because it's not going to stay here at home, and, you know, the company that owns and builds the pipeline.
Same for Keystone. Same argument.
Precisely. And that's an argument that was successfully made when they tried to run the damn thing west through through First Nations territories in Canada. And, mm-hmm. And I mean, nobody's even going to see a penny's difference in the price at the pump.
No.
Or a quart of 5W20.
I would throw in one admonition. The native bands in Canada, particularly in the West, where it's been most active, are fully capable of stopping pipelines. It goes to a band vote in most cases, and by and large, they're saying no. Unless there's sufficient offset economic benefits that they can see and everybody buy into. But the idea that any oil company could just go to government and say, I'm going to build a pipeline, government says yes, and they start expropriating land and running it through reserves or reservations, it doesn't happen that way up here, at least not to my knowledge. They have a voice, and they are really good at using it.
Well, I saw a story today, and I may be misremembering the number that I saw, but it was of a Canadian band who had rejected something on the order of $267,000 per person.
Yep.
In a democratically held vote that would have allowed some nightmare hydrocarbon outfit to pillage their land.
Yep.
God, how many Americans would have that kind of community commitment?
In West Virginia?
None. Well, no, not none, because, I mean, that has happened. I mean, that's how the Stanley Ayres Park became created there, right in the middle of all the hell on earth that used to be Cayford Mountain.
Yeah.
It was a group of people who absolutely refused to sell out.
How big is that little reserve area?
Oh, maybe 50 acres.
Yeah,
tops.
Maybe. Yeah.
Used to be the lowest point on the mountain. Now it's all the mountain that's left. It looks down on everything else.
Yeah. I'm just mentioning that it doesn't always have to be that way. And the natives in Canada are being run over routinely because they're governed by something I used to be called the Indian Act. I'm not sure what it's called now. They softened the language somewhat, but it governed the schools, the money that goes to the various bands, and some of the bands being made up of humans, just like you and me, it became a family operation, and money was misdirected, et cetera, in a few places, in which case the conservatives tarnished all the bands the same way, but we've got situations in Canada where it's embarrassing. The state of the medical community in those bands, their health care. We've got some bands in Northern Ontario, for example, that have been under a boil water advisory for 15, 20 years. No sewage treatment plants.
How did that mine in British Columbia happen whose sludge dam broke, what, a year ago? Yeah. And is still befouling everything downstream?
Yeah. Shades of West Virginia. It's certainly not enlightened up here yet. I think the current government wants to do more, but there's a long tradition of stifling Aboriginal rights, sending them off to residential schools to and whipping them when they try to speak their native tongue,
oh, yeah,
et cetera. So, you know, there was a reconciliation hearings that were held, and it did a lot of good. The problem is some of this stuff is so entrenched that up until like, 15, 20 years ago, the government felt perfectly okay with telling people in a given band, okay, you have to move. It's costing us too much to get food, water, etc. So you've got to move to someplace less expensive, or you have to move because, you know, this land's going to be mined, etc. And the claim.
Well, I know our buddy Chris up in the Northwest Territories is in the heart of some of that.
Yeah.
I mean, once he sent me a couple of pictures of Great Slave Lake.
What a gorgeous lake.
Oh, my God. But then I started looking at the history, and you know, the town, Yellowknife, exists because of the mining industry.
It does, yeah.
And what's been done around there is, of course, nightmarish.
It's on a par with West Virginia. And northern Alberta, the tar sands, same way. And there are folks that are starting to say that the stuff that's happening in the tar sands is influencing the deep aquifers in ways that's going to impact people 500 miles away from there.
And 500 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, that's the perversion of science, Ron.
But you have to understand one fact, and it doesn't necessarily apply to the U.S., is that someone once described Canada as a land of people who are hewers of wood and drawers of water. And it's been a resource-based economy, with the exception probably of southern Ontario and southern Quebec. Most of Canadian history has been linked to resources.
That's the essence of colonialism.
Yeah. Dig it out, ship it somewhere, make money off of it. And I will say I sense much more of a real interest in moving the yardsticks up here than I did ever have in the U.S. But you can't turn an aircraft carrier around in a narrow channel. You got to keep going for a while. It's going to take time to turn things around. You can't turn around in an entire economy.
No, it doesn't happen overnight. But I guess my question, Ron, is at what point do we see tangible evidence that anybody's even thinking about, you know, getting the aircraft carrier out into open water and turning it around? Because I don't see it beyond lip service. I don't see just a hell of a lot of it here in the United States. I mean,
no.
For instance, I had a story up a little bit ago, and you know, greenwashing is obnoxious. And this story focused on a couple of corporations, one of whom was Pepsi. And Pepsi makes all these corporate pronouncements about how they're serious about climate change, blah, 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 blah. And then they turn around and they give vast sums of money to the chief climate change deniers in the government.
Why?
Well, I mean, I guess they're hedging their bets.
Well,
the only reason you give money to government is because you want something out of government, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's it ain't corporate altruism. I'm pretty damn sure of that.
Yeah, I was an industrial pimp to government for years. I understand how that model works. But I will say this, in Ontario, as one example, we've got, if you drive from Windsor to Ottawa, which is just north of Detroit, actually Windsor, believe it or not, is a Canadian city that is across the river and south of Detroit.
Yeah, that's why my buddy from Detroit used to lose his temper every time he heard Journey's "Don't Stop Believin'." You know, born and raised in South Detroit, that line, he'd scream,
yeah,
"God damn it, that's Windsor. That ain't Detroit."
Yeah. But on that trip, in between there and Toronto, you will pass at least 500 enormous windmills, wind turbines.
Yeah, Sparky doesn't like it when you say windmills.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the province has kicked in a big benefit on electrical charges to anybody who puts solar on their roof or allowed solar farms to be built on their property. The basic rate is about 15 cents for a kilowatt hour on average in Ontario. It's still damned expensive electricity. And if you put up a windmill, what's called cogeneration, like you had a small stream with a dam and an old hydro mill on it.
Right.
Whatever. They put a program in place that paid you 80 cents per kilowatt hour. Well, Christ, it was a booming industry until the province realized how much it was going to cost them, and they throttled it back. Everybody who got in early was grandfathered. But we got nuclear up here. They've completely shut down every coal-fired power plant in Ontario and canceled even two or three gas-fired plants at an enormous cost. But they're really trying to move towards weaning people away from traditional sources of energy. And we got a carbon tax coming in 1st of January. On gasoline, for example, it's going up 4.5 cents a liter, which is about, call it 20 cents, real money, per gallon. Vancouver's had it for years. BC's had it for years. So there's much more of a thought up here of, on the government's part, of transforming the energy economy, but it's still got a long way to go.
Well, you can't...
You can't do it overnight.
No, I mean, I think that's axiomatic. But what you're describing is an effort to do it.
Yes.
The efforts down here, and I don't want to take away from anybody in the United States who is making that effort, especially the individuals, okay? I mean, we've got people in the Horn Family Community Congregation who are making that effort, and they're making it on their own.
And they live and breathe and think this stuff all the time.
And I honor that. I'll even go to so far as to say I envy that. I mean, winter, as you noted, Ron, is coming, and winter is a hard damn thing here.
Yeah, you got a neighbor with a coal-fired.
I'm going to start. Yeah, I'll be breathing that shit by October. And beyond that, I mean, it's time for me to start stockpiling little. And you know, congratulations, you talk about living green, and you're about to. It's time for me to start stockpiling little bottles of propane to keep the studio warm back here, and frankly to keep the entire house warm, you know, because there's no central heat.
I was going to mention I think last time I called in I mentioned I'd gone up through Cass.
Yeah,
and I was up in the restaurant, and I'm only going to say it this way just in honor of Carol, who might be listening. But I stopped in a little restaurant there and had myself a sandwich. And I'm out on the balcony watching, and one of those big old Shea locomotives, gear drivens that hauled the log trains.
Yeah.
They're pulling cars of tourists.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a big deal at Cass.
Yeah,
parking lot's full. That's the Cass Scenic Railway.
Right. Well, they fired that sucker up. Big clouds of black smoke coming out, and the wind changed. I had forgotten just how awful coal smoke actually is. It was putrid. It's the only word to describe it. Acrid. Burns your eyes, burns your nose. And it was interesting thing to watch. Huge, big, black clouds of smoke just drifting towards you. And filled with carbon.
And cinders. Flight. Cinders. Don't forget the cinders.
Yeah. Well, they dropped the cinders on the track, apparently. But
well, and in the winter, on the roads, too.
Yeah. Well, cinders don't eat your car up.
But where I was headed a minute ago is
I'm
to
sorry,
say,
did I get you sidetracked?
No, no, no. This conversation is meant to be horizontal, not vertical, for God's sakes. is to say that beyond the individual efforts that are being made, despite the screeches and howls of the right wing, our efforts are haphazard at best. I mean, I just got notification this week of a couple of more mountaintop removal permits that have been applied for in West Virginia.
And you know what?
We're not going to stop until someone stops us. And that's what I meant earlier about, you know, I've never seen it. I mean, I don't know how you wean off heroin, and I don't know how you wean off hydrocarbons. Apparently, we're not going to wean off in Appalachia until it's just gone.
Well, was it?
And Ron, as a hillbilly who loves this place, and I know you do, that's heartbreaking because that means here in Appalachia, we're doomed.
Yeah. Not sure I buy that. I still run into a lot of people with spirit.
Oh no, it's not a lack of spirit.
But you live in a state. You mentioned, I think it was on either Chris or Rachel's show, one of the two, that you live in a state where, by God, when you buy a politician, they stay bought.
Oh yeah,
West Virginia's got this whole mythology that's still going forward that coal governs the economy. And what's good for coal is good for West Virginia. And it hasn't been that way for a couple of decades.
Nope.
But the myth is still there. The PR machine's still fueling it. The difference between the U.S. and Canada is that up here, the drive to move to alternate sources of energy starts at the top. It's not as nearly as strong as I would like to see it, but at least the federal government seems to be committed, and two or three of the provincial governments seem to be committed. Like Quebec, get all of their...
Well, sure. California's committed. New York's committed. Massachusetts is committed. You've got these state commitments out there, just like you do provincially in Canada, but the federal government can only go so far. It's almost like the gun problem. There's only so much the executive branch can do, and the legislative branch is in a state of complete dysfunction.
And you have states' rights. You've got all kinds of states who will argue against the EPA, for example, strengthening any of the rules for the EPA. West Virginia is one of the co-filers of the suit against the EPA, if I'm not correct.
You're absolutely right. And in 2015, they held the summit meeting here, Ron,
ooh,
wherein the Republican Attorneys General Association entered into its conspiracy. And I use the word knowingly, entered into the conspiracy to waste taxpayers' dollars trying to stop the EPA from being able to put into effect in the federal government the tiny, itsy-bitsy, miserable, little, half-hearted, tepid reforms that are contained in the Clean Power Plan.
Yeah.
And I think that gets heard, like, next week.
And they're going to lose.
The Attorneys General? You think the Attorneys General will?
Yeah.
I don't.
Really?
I wouldn't take that bet. I'd say 50-50 at best.
I'll bet you a beer.
That's a bet I'll take.
And if I lose, I'll bring down some damn good Canadian beer.
That would be mighty fine.
Now, Bob, I got a sale. Believe it or not, I still have a client that needs something by tomorrow morning, so I'm going to do the billable Rick routine and bugger off to justify my living.
Your lavish lifestyle? Yes.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, it should be noted that you did reference during Tracy's conversation, you did reference poutine.
Oh, son. You got to have some real honest-to-God poutine cooked up by somebody.
Squeaky cheese curds, freshly fried fries, brown gravy. Bring it.
Oh. Heart attack.
It just amazes me that hasn't made it to West Virginia yet. Because do you realize we would shovel that up in front end loader bucketfuls?
Absolutely. When my daughter was living in Brooklyn, a couple of Canadians opened up a poutine restaurant in Red Hook, I think it was called. And the lineup went for three of Tracy's blocks. It just took right off. They loved it.
See, the only thing holding us back here is the funny name.
Yeah. But we drink champagne down there occasionally, don't we?
Well,
that's one of those French names.
Yeah, it's all Frenchy. Right, yeah. Oh, God almighty. Ron, you have yourself a good night. It's been a lovely conversation, and I do appreciate it.
Well, you take care, sir.
I'm going to try.
And to all the listeners, both of them, send money. Take care, y'all.
See you, Ron. Bye now. And again, thank you to Matthew and Charlene and Bob and Mark in Florida. For some reason or other, I'm not getting my notifications this evening, and I don't really know why. But thank you all very kindly. We've got about $155 to raise to come even otherwise tomorrow night. The fundraising goal is $355. So thank you very kindly. It is time to get out of here. Friday on the Front Porch is on the way tomorrow, and I know y'all look forward to that as much as I do. And I do look forward to it a lot. It's just, it's unlike anything else that happens anywhere else. And it's really, really, if you participate, you know. It's a rousing conversation, and it's really special. Thanks again to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. You're why the conversation is ongoing. You've created this. I haven't. You have. Thanks to everybody who is a subset of that group who helps keep it all going. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. I guess Sparky has gone off to the opening night in the NFL tonight. Thanks very kindly to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.